Good morning. This is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. 4341790 is our call number. 266-4862. 266-IVOB is the WhatsApp number where you send messages to us. And or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. John Stout taking care of things technical in the upper room. I'm Dennis Johnson, your host. We go until 2 this afternoon with our usual breaks for the regional roundup, tracking the latest network news from Flow, the latest from Starcom Network News, and also the latest sports, which we have right after the latest at 12:30. And after that nice little dip in the lights, it's time for me to say good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. While John handles that, we just had a slight loss of power. I hope it did not interrupt our transmission to you. And the first thing off the bat is a question. Whether Remembrance Day and Independence Day parades will take place as usual. I can find all that for you. You see, asking open-ended questions over the air, I don't usually expect to get answers that way. I trust to go the regular channels, which is send a message to someone who I think can answer. I don't always trust messages that I just receive off the cuff, unless I know the sender. But I'll try and find that out. That's an interesting question. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hi, good morning, Glenn. Hi.
Nine, where again? How are you doing? Good?
I'm all right. I'm good.
Good, good. Good to hear you again. I want to approach the question of these proposed debates among the candidates from a particular angle. But first of all, let me set the context of which I'm talking. The part of the role of the media, and they want not only the debate, but the role of Barjam in the debate. Part of the role of the media is to not only inform and educate, but to keep the government, keep a society on, examine society, it's good, it's bad, it works, it's blessing, it ups and it's downs, to keep democracy going, to examine governance, and basically to keep a constant look at governance, to keep a constant examination and keep society examined, looking at itself, etc., etc. And so that's one of the roles of journalism. What I find particularly ironic is now that in Barbados, we know the people who are supposed to do that role are not themselves examined, far less regulated. In other words, there's no organization that passes judgment, examines, corrects, commends, criticizes journalism in an ongoing, structured, authoritative way.
You think there should be? You think there should be?
I think there should be watchdogs.
Okay.
In the same way that journalists are watchdogs of society, mm-hmm. somebody has to guarantee. Some watchdogs have to watchdog the watchdog thing, if you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To make sure the principles are adhered to, the practices, the ethics, and those finer points of it. Fairness, neutrality, etc.
So if you have, for example, the broadcast authority, wouldn't they have that kind of role?
As a broadcast authority. Mm-hmm. You'll have to get a journalism or some other institution.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't have to be even government. It could be not, it could be just apolitical, a part of, it could be an NGO that has no bias. So, and I say that because one of my problems with the Barjam is when it was proposed and when it agreed that it would, when it announced that the Americans would sponsor its award ceremony, I think it's in July, next month, November. And that triggered some alarms in my head, as an old-time journalist, where I felt that in the same way that the Barjam would not, I'm sure, I said this already, just repeating myself, would not have accepted sponsorship from the Democrat Labour Party or the Barbados Labour Party or UPP or whatever, I think it's very dangerous then for their image, the perception of embarrassment, apolitical, to accept a thing from a U.S. government, because as the Americans would tell, there's not such thing as a free lunch. And they should not. I think the bar jump should never put itself in a position where it can be feed, it can be manipulated or controlled or ordered or dictated or persuaded, whatever influences I exerted. I think one has to be very careful to protect and preserve the independence and even the perception of independence of journalism. So therefore, when I also heard that the president of Barajam said that they had been mandated by government to organize these debates, again, another alarm, mandate. I don't see how government has the right authority, legitimacy to mandate to a body like a professional body like Barajam to do something. I don't know if I don't know if Mr. Joseph chose the wrong words to express the arrangement. But he said, I can only go by what he said is mandated. And we know that words have consequences, as Mr. Bradshaw has been over the last several days. So that caught me a little concerned about mandated. Because I said, wait, but even if they were mandated, I said, why would... And I understand they want to play a role in public debate, et cetera, et cetera. All right. But I understand why would they be so concerned about working in debates, organizing debates, but there's no mention of press conferences these days. There's no such thing. You might get a press briefing where you are summoned at a particular time to come to somebody they want to speak on something, give information on something. A press briefing, from my understanding, from all that I've examined, a press briefing is there from a press conference where somebody wants to deal with a particular topic from their angle to make themselves obviously look good, put themselves in their job or the institute in a particular light. As against a good old-fashioned press conference where you come and you're open to searching questions.
But let me ask you this, uh-huh. Glenn. In the uh-huh. past, when you were involved with government, who arranged or organized press conferences?
A minister would say through GIS.
Okay.
Or journalists themselves would organize it.
Okay. The same thing with debates, right?
What? Journalists organize debates?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm saying...
Who organized debates in the past?
Who organized... I know debates were organized through CBC.
Right. Now, but you see, Glenn, and this is the thing. My recollection, and I may be wrong in this, but my recollection is, and this is going back to 1994 when I first became involved with this company, it was the media organization that organized, whether you want to call it face-offs, debates, call it what you want to call it. Stockholm had several of them as Barbados Radio Diffusion Service Limited, where they would invite, let's say, the Minister of Education and the Shadow Minister of Education, or persons from both political parties representing a point of view, and have them sitting on down to brass tacks or a type of forum like that.
I'm talking about the context of a by-election, you know.
I'm talking about the context of a general election. I don't know anything. I do not have a recollection of this happening for by-elections. I have known it happening for general elections, and it was usually organized by the media house. So we had radio debates here at Starcom. I actually moderated two of them, incidentally.
I think in 94 I did one myself.
Correct. I remember that too, because I had come here on the end, actually in October of 1994. So I would have remembered the one prior to that, because, as I said, I came in on the tail end of the whole uproar over the Sandiford administration, literally, okay? So I would not have been part of it then. I was still, perhaps, let me put it in short pants, trainee. But when I went to CBC, it was on the heels of CBC having one where David, I think, was one of the journalists involved. And there was an opportunity during the debates for crosstalk between the opposing parties, and apparently there were people who didn't like it. So come 2003, the next election, which was actually the last television debate, I was the moderator. And I remember sitting in on the discussions in the boardroom at CBC. The late Owen Arthur objected to the format that was being presented because of the crosstalk in the last one. It was decided that the questions would be given to the moderator, who would ask the question, give each candidate a chance to respond, allow a rebuttal, and then you go to the next question. And he didn't like that, but that was what was put, that was what was accepted, and I don't think he participated, but others did. And I hosted the last one. And I recall all the discussions leading up to it. I recall who took part in it, and I recall how they presented themselves. But hold on. The reason why I'm saying this, Glenn, is to go back to what you were saying about Barjam.
I'm not dealing with debates themselves, you know.
I know you're talking about this one.
All I'm saying is that there are more important things. The Barjam has not been pressing for press conferences, freedom of information.
I can't say so.
Well, as far as I can, I have not known or heard of it.
Okay.
And if all these things,
I think that's fair enough.
Fair enough. I can only go by. I suppose I treat myself as a member of the public, and they judge by what I hear. I'm saying that. What about what became of the post cabinet press conferences or post cabinet briefings?
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that sure, there's a role for debates. I'm not really dealing about the desirability of debates or the functionality of debates. I'm saying that. To accept that mandate, as you say, to be mandated, or to accept you can be mandated, I do not pay attention to the more overriding long-term thing of freedom of information, accountability, transparency on an ongoing, consistent basis. Because I see that with such a large cabinet and everybody such heavy lifting, that should be lots of information available for the many ministers. And there should be a forum on a regular basis for people to press to get to know what's happening in those institutions. That's what I mean, you know.
Okay.
And I think they've missed the boat. I think they've catch at the shadow and missed the boat. And I think they have to get back to press government. Sure, have your debates, whatever, no problem. But your central role should not be about that.
I don't disagree with you with that. And let me say, my underlying concern has always been whether we have journalists today or whether we just have reporters. And there's a distinction in my mind between the two. And I don't believe we have the type of practicing journalists that we had, I would say, 20, 30 years ago. I think the fraternity has come down to reporters who go out and cover various things and come back with a report and that's it. The journalists are few and far between and going out of the business. They go into PR these days. They get more money and recognition, apparently. Thanks, O'Gang. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hey.
How are you doing, man?
I a little husky still, but I'm all right.
Okay. Now, I want to speak this morning on three topics. Republic and independence and local government. But before I go on to that, you know I have to compliment you.
What?
I compliment you. If you heard the public outcry and what they said, then you do things and public domain that don't forget. People recall moderators, telling callers, they know where they're coming from, they know your agenda, and such like. And as soon as these people get into positions of authority, the people already know where they stand. Thank God for you have never found yourself in that position, and today you are free of such accusations. That is why he praised you. So then people crying out today and said they don't want this moderator. They don't mind the debate, but not that moderator. They have a reason. They're not foolish. This radio station has the biggest following. And you are holding the candle ahead of all of them, showing that you are not biased. So then people cry out, they got a reason to. Sufficient for that, Sir Dennis. That way, sky is
okay,
the now, the other thing, though, I want to talk about independence. When we went into independence, Dennis, what were the purpose that the politicians told the electorate for going into independence? You got an idea?
Well, I can't say I can recall verbatim, but I can tell you some of the things that were raised were an opportunity to chart your own destiny, let loose of the British coattails, stand on your own, self-determination and all the other appealing things that spoke of national pride, and being
yes,
responsible
you're
for
correct.
your destiny.
You are correct.
That was what I used to hear.
No, that is why, and instead of going further with the Republic, all of this is saying giving the people to perform or decide on their own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to do a little civic. Because when I was going to school, we had to learn who is the minister, how many ministers you have,
mm-hmm.
who is the minister by name,
mm-hmm.
which constituency they represented, mm-hmm. and those there that was parish.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Double member constituency or something. I would say after reflecting, because I like to look back and do my own research. As I tell you, I tell nobody, can't bring a paper and give me the papers that is given to me. I bought them. Now, let us look on independence, and I assure you that we are behaving in an independent fashion without any big hullabaloo. I remember growing up and hearing, as I start from St. Lucie, there were two members representing St. Lucie, Sir Cameron Tudor and J.T. Branger, and I don't think that they were from St. Lucie. Since the independent thoughts of the people has reached a stage, for the last couple of years, you had Kelman, now you have Mr. Phillips. You come to St. Peter, you had Owen Arthur, and now you have Colin Jordan. You come to St. Andrew, you have George Payne. You come to St. Joseph, it is the only constituency that don't have a representative that came from the parish. St. Thomas, you have St. Ford. You go to St. George, you have in the south, you have Dwight Sutherland, and in the north, it was Glenn Clark. Now you're vying for a replacement. If you continue on the independence trail, it will mean, therefore, you should choose somebody from among you. And Dennis, I ain't going no further. I'm going to listen, because I ain't listening role now.
So you thanks, see, Dennis. One of the things I like about you, right, is how you set up the wicket, roll it nicely, and then you roll the piece of what you got cut for yesterday, which is called... Anyhow, I can let a ball fly and let the wicketkeeper catch it.
Dennis,
have a good
Dennis.
One, sir. You know what canvassing is very well. Listen, you try. Have a good one, sir. The wicket was rolled. I sat here listening and waiting on the ball to drop. It turned just where I thought it would turn. My bat was nicely tucked behind my pad and smiling. Have a good one, sir. Brass tacks, good morning.
Johnson.
Good morning, ma'am. I have not heard you in a while. How are you?
Well, I'm here, but I listen to you when you're on. How are you?
I'm a little husky, but I'm all right. The rain treated you well, because we had some heavy rain and flooding recently, yes. And I know up by you is not easy.
I know that each time it rains, you know what happened to me. You need
it. I know. You need to buy a coast guard and put it outside your house.
Oh, no, I need a speedboat.
No, I want you move slowly. I want you go too fast.
Anyway,
of course, God, safe. Yes, ma'am.
I have two things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember, I don't know if you was the moderator or what, or you was the producer, like the cutting part, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You remember when Michael Lashley and Enderware, it was Enderware, yes, was running... a lady call in and say, oh, she's sorry for, I think it was Enderware. If I'm wrong about that, I'm sorry. The people are taking off these posters and chewing them in the gutter, let the gutter run, they run away.
Yeah.
Right. And, other people, other BLP posters was, taken down and she laughed about it. And your boss, which I don't want to call his name, said, oh, well, that's
politics. That happens all the time.
I can't hear, but
mm-hmm.
posters always take down all over where there is election in the Caribbean, and it's nice to talk about posters. And if Mr. Reefer didn't know anything about politics, he should have known that does happen, right? And I sometimes sometimes, I'm not saying it's here, sometimes it happened with the said party, not this government, not this, I'm talking, they take down posters to say people are taking down their posters. So that's the least he should talk about. What he should do is to say in 10 years, when my government was in power, we didn't do anything. We are sorry about the pavilion that didn't finish build in 10 years, the pit toilets that never get done in 10 years. Now, I'm going to leave off that now. What I'm talking about, people coming over and they was told to isolate, right? And they go in hotels or where they're staying. If those people can be proven that they're doing it, the government should get the Coast Guard. Let the hotel pay the Coast Guard, treble their pay, and watch those people, because they cannot come in the country and spread in the, if they have the disease. What is you waiting a few days to check to see if you have it? Why do you want to go out? You in a hotel, everything can taken there to you for you to use. What is 3 or 4 days waiting? And if the government are keep talking about they're going to find them heavily, they're not making no mistake. Stop the talking and find them. Because it's people life you're messing with. I'm a bad asthmatic. You can hear it sometime when I'm talking. You understand, Mr. Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, somebody come and I could have gone out next to that person. And something happened, I get it. How do I know I get it from where? That's why I stay in my, in, you know, from the lockdown, Mr. Johnson. I've been outside 10 times.
I won't be surprised.
I'm so scared.
Yeah, because, and you see, ma'am, this perhaps is the challenge for a lot of people. If you're accustomed to following instructions, if you believe you're vulnerable, you will take the necessary precautions. You won't go out more than you need to. You'll avoid crowds. You will stay away from situations that you think will aggravate your condition. You say you're a bad asthmatic.
Yeah, I am.
Bad asthmatics know that dust, smoke, inhalation, and things like that would aggravate their condition. So they won't go into those places. But there are other people who feel, you can't tell me what to do. I pay my money. I can't sit down here all the time. What do you want me to do? And they get up and go.
Well, you know what they should do with them if they find that they get
lock
out?
Lock them up.
Find them and lock them up. Yes.
Lock them up.
Because it's ridiculous. Keep talking.
You're show them what restraint looks like. Ma'am, I can't disagree with you. I believe we should be self-disciplined.
Stop talking. And lock them up. I find them heavily. I put them back the next flight. Straight back where they come from. They cannot come in the country and want to spread that nasty disease. It's not right. People with babies that are asthmatic, old people, people with all kind of ailments, diabetes, heart problem, asthmatic. I was in a coma for 4 weeks with my asthma. You think I want to go back through that again?
I wouldn't. And I wouldn't like to be the person who has to give you care and attention either, because it's just as traumatic with them, because they don't know if or when they'll lose you.
Yes, the nurses and the doctor got to be round the clock looking after somebody that is, you know, you think it's easy on the nurses and the doctor to do this, especially when the doctor finished. Is the nurse got all those to be checking on you every minute to see if you're still breathing? And these idiots come into this country and do not want to obey the law. It's about time the government stop the talking, and if it's true and they find one, make an example of that one. Find it so heavy or put them in we call that place the Pelican or whatever you call it. Put them there for the 14 days. Okay, thank you, yes, sir.
Have a good one. Stay safe. 4341790, the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. The WhatsApp message says, I'm here at the QEH for an appointment and I'm outside sitting down under a small tent with 9 chairs and 15 people with no social distancing going on. However, there are 10 chairs inside, practicing social distancing with 6 people sitting. It's hot out here, we are sweating, so I don't know why they would have called me yesterday, told me to come close to 9 to be seated. This is not good. Where's the COVID monitoring team? Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm all right. How are you?
Huh?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I in the Garden of Eden.
Good place to be. Stay away from snakes.
Yeah.
And apples.
And serpents.
And apples.
It never saw what kind of apples.
I just tell you, any kind of apple.
See, no,
And while you're at it, leave out the cherries too.
I get it at all.
I know that. I know why John wagging the finger at me. You fellas. Anyway, you're in the garden. Go ahead. What's happening in the garden today?
Well, they're listening to the birds and feeling the breeze, and it's really so relaxing and refreshing.
Good. That means you're in a good mood.
Yeah, thanks for putting me back from the brink the other day.
That's what friends are for. Don't worry about that.
I heard a caller some time ago, a female caller who I never know was her. Until the other said, you have been a regular caller? He said, yes. He said, what do you sound like that? And this is a lady who has been complaining about state of her health for the longest while, and she said she had a massive stroke. Now, my thing is that with all the taxes that have been thrown upon people, the answer is they've got to pay them. Why is it that these kind of things still exist?
What kind of things?
People can't get certain types of equipment to check. You can't remember the name. But it is heartbreaking. And this kind of thing has been going on from government to government to government.
So the thing is this, huh? When you have a situation where you opt to provide certain services for your population as a social good, so transportation, healthcare, education, you can provide at a certain level if some things are happening. One, you're earning enough money to support it, either through taxes, through direct investment, through the generation of income from capital works and other things of that nature. If you have a slowdown on one side, then you either have to cut the services or you have to get it from somewhere else. What has happened over a period of time is we have allowed some of the things that we've provided for our citizens, the cost of providing it has spiraled out of our reach. So whereas in the past, the transport board may have been operating buses that could be acquired for less than $100,000 a unit, and you could run them and pay $1.50 to travel on them because there was enough people traveling them on them to give you enough revenue to pay your staff to maintain the buses, etc. When you get to the stage where there are less people traveling, the buses are more expensive, the cost of maintaining the fleet is higher, the salaries you pay to your staff higher, you end up in problems. It's the same thing with healthcare. All over the world, healthcare has become astronomical in costs because of insurance, insurance fraud, personal abuse, and the pharmaceutical companies making a killing for their shareholders. So when you have a situation where a drug that you would use to treat, let's say, lupus, goes from being $50 for a bottle of 100 tablets to $2,500 for a bottle of 50 tablets because planes not flying and you have to charter a flight to get it. And the company that's bringing it in say, if I gotta bring it in, you gotta pay for the flight. What are you supposed to do? What do you do when, you know, the plastic bottles you just put tablets in to give people? The little plastic vial?
They don't charge you for that, right? But if somebody has to bring in 1,000 of them from Miami, and to get a flight to bring it in is $2,500 US, they can charge you for it some way or the other. So health costs in particular and insurance fraud, put those two together and you'll see why we're in the situation we're in. And government can't fix that easy, you know.
I wasn't even talking about...
I know you were talking about machines and people having... Right. Yeah, but what I'm showing you is what's happened over the health industry in general, why it gets down to that stage.
And I listen to it. Right? I have heard people come on the calling program and talk about consultants being paid $22,000 and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have heard about that.
Okay.
Rather than keep chopping away at the small man, why I always say when you start to prune a tree, you start at the top. Anytime you go to the roots and you're not putting fertilizer, you're killing the tree. Why is it that politicians on both sides can only see what is wrong when they're in opposition?
Because the vision is better when you're outside. So keep them outside.
But you know me, right? I care about people. I hate to see people suffer. It hurts me.
So
I'm not the kind of man that I don't care about other people. Because what is happening to you today can easily happen to me in a second.
Yeah.
Right? And it's sad. It's sad. It's like your vomit ain't eating about your vomit.
Sir?
You know, I think this kind of things have to stop. It should stop.
Sir, I will tell you again. It cannot and will not stop. The reason why it cannot and will not stop is because the system is not designed to fix the problems. The system is designed so that somebody could find an error and make money off of it. You have a cell phone. I show you have a cell phone. And I show the cell phone you have now is not the one you had when Nokia's first came in with a little funny shaped thing that you could have pelt, mash up, put it back together. You could drop it down a toilet and flush it, bring it up, spray some disinfectant on it, and it would still work. They stopped making them like that because they know if they made it like that, you'll never buy another new one. So they made them so that they mash up, so you buy a new one. The system is not designed to fix the problem. The system is designed to identify a problem and to find a way to make money off of it. Until then, stay in the garden, because anytime you come out, you will see the real world. And the real world is what I just tell you, okay? Stay away from the forbidden fruit. Stick with the ones you could eat. Chomp on a piece of grass. A legal piece, all right? Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hey.
There are three topics I would like to discuss with you this morning. The first one is I'm going to respond to the lady who called you and talk about the LP should have apologized for the mistakes that they did. Now, during the 14 years of plenty of Prime Minister Owen Arthur, the St. John Polyclinic was left incomplete. Since this government has come into being, have they apologized to the people of St. John for having to wait 14 years before a polyclinic?
I don't know.
Hello?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. The next one I'm going to look at is the St. George by-election. Now, recently there was a general election in Jamaica. And only 37% of the electorate voted in that election. Wasn't that election, general election, impacted by COVID?
Again, sir, I can't answer from this distance for a number of reasons. COVID may have been one of the reasons. Voter apathy may have been a part of the reason. Distrust or lack of interest because of
various challenges with the opposition. That too may have been part of it. Not living in Jamaica and not knowing what's happening on the ground from this distance, I won't stick my neck out and say it's COVID by
itself.
All right,
okay, Dennis. Don't you expect that the St. George by election is going to be impacted by COVID?
Sir, again, as in with the Jamaican election, I cannot say that COVID is the reason why people may or
I'm
may not turn
up. I'm not talking about Jamaica.
I'm answering you. I am saying to you, the same way I could not say that COVID had an impact in Jamaica, I can't sit here prior to a by-election in St. George and say that COVID will have an impact.
Okay.
I can't say, so look, let me tell you why I say this. So that you understand. No. Let me tell you why I say this. I see people going to the supermarket. I see them line up outside to go to the bank. I see them liming down here on a weekend by the bars here, having a drink and eating. And we have COVID restrictions. But they're doing that because they want to do that. I can't say what can happen in St. George.
Okay. If people are taking part in a contest, would one of the opponents come up with an idea that is advantageous to everybody?
I don't think so.
So who suggested the idea about debates?
The first person I heard saying it was the Prime Minister of Barbados.
So that is part of the election strategy.
Again, I can't say that. I don't advise them.
I'm not a strategist. I'm saying it.
Okay.
That's part of the BLP's election strategy.
Okay.
And in order for any of the opposition, in order for any candidate to win in this election, you have to get out the electorate. So everybody is putting forward strategy that will get out their supporters. The DLP is putting forward his strategy to get out his supporters.
Right.
And he has nothing to gain in a national debate.
How do you know that? He told you so?
There's nothing to gain in a national debate apart. There's more to gain from going out canvassing, pounding the road, and coming face to face with the people in St. George North than taking part in a debate.
How do you know that, sir? Why would you say that?
It's a national debate, okay? So everybody in Barbados is going to be watching it.
Including the people in St. George North?
But if he isn't interacting with the people in St. George North, would they think they're going to be concerned with anything he says in a national debate?
They might be surprised. Sir, let me ask you something. Did you happen to see on national television a debate between Dame Billy Miller and Mr. Richard Seeley some years ago?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
What happened in that debate?
I think you can recall it right now.
Okay, well, let me recall it for you, right? Almost everyone who saw that discussion, including people I know who were strong supporters of the Barbados Labour Party, said Mr. Seeley came out on top in that debate because he seemed to be on the ball, responded well, cross-talked well, and really executed it so well that people asked why he wasn't leading the Democratic Labour Party into that election.
Hold on.
Of course it was a general election, sir, but Mr. Seeley was not running for Barbados. He was running for a constituency. The point I am making is, if his debate presentation was so impressive that the general population thought so, would it not have affected also the constituency he was running in, who would say, this man sounds real good, he could represent me? You get my point?
Right.
So my thing is this. It is your decision. Yes. You decide what's your strategy. Yes. But if someone sets it what you think is a trap for you and you could exploit it, then your strategy should be, let them set the trap and I can let it slam on them. You see, the problem that I have is that people tell me that, you know, I'm arrogant and I think a lot of myself. And I do. My thing is, if you set a trap for me, make sure that you could trap me.
Because if I step into it, there's only one way you're getting out, and that's flat on your back, because I can take you out. You see, sir, a debate is this, right? You do one of two things. You either debate the topic or you debate the person you're debating. And you decide which you want to do. If you follow any debate anywhere, go and look at the US one that everybody talking about. And you could see who decide to debate the topic and who decide to debate the person. Now, sometimes you fall on your face because you pick the wrong way to do it. But strategies could be undone by other strategists, sir. And I am not saying that anybody's strategy is the right one until it works. Okay? That's all. But I just find that there are people who, from what they're saying, they're making it seem more that like the candidate afraid to debate than that they don't want to do it. And I know what they're trying to do, but it's coming across the wrong way. You know?
All right, finally, Dennis. Yesterday I raised this stuff with Joy, but she didn't appear to understand what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm.
What I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Truman speech,
right,
it was said that we're going to have a referendum on same-sex marriages. I'm not here to give my opinion on same-sex marriages or what people are doing in the bedroom or anything like that. Do you perceive that the outcome of this referendum is a foregone conclusion?
So I can't say it's a foregone conclusion because according to the person who does polling, which is Peter Wickham, I don't do polling.
He did some polling on homosexuality.
And he said that
a large percentage of people aren't in favor of that.
Right. But he's also said that over a period of time, people's perceptions have changed. Right? So I cannot say, based on nothing, that it's a foregone conclusion. It depends on a couple of things, sir. Like the same thing you're talking about election and people turning out. If you have a low turnout, and the low turnout are people who are opposed to the idea, just as happened in other Caribbean countries that had referenda on Republican status and other things. If the percentage of people who are inspired to go out and vote do so because they want to say no, you will have a no answer. If there is a high turnout and the majority of people turn out are those who want to say yes, you will have a yes. And I can't determine what that outcome would be because I don't know how people feel about going out to vote on that issue. It's not that they don't have an opinion on it. It's that they're not moved to go out to vote on it.
Let me ask you this.
If there is a referendum on same-sex marriages, would you go out to vote on it?
I suppose the referendum is going to be held on the day of the general election.
But
you don't have a referendum. They saw that money to suggest vote on.
I thought so too. But I don't know whether it will be or not. I also think the same thing about people talking about whether or not there should be one on a republic. Now, I thought we were discussing republicanism since back in 1980-something. We even had a commission on it, and they sat and talked to people. But anyhow, I think it would be part of a general election campaign, yes. But would you vote on it?
I would vote on it.
Right.
My right to vote.
Right. And that is because you have an opinion on it, right?
Yeah, I vote whenever.
Okay. All right. Right.
Right.
But are there not people who don't go out to vote at all?
They do what they want to do.
Sir, have you ever had 100%?
The point I was trying to make yesterday is why we are having a referendum on this same-sex marriage and we are not having anything on republicanism.
But I told you because we had that. Didn't we have that already?
Pardon me?
Didn't we have discussions on republicanism already? Didn't we have a commission on it? Didn't we have people giving the ideas and it coming forward and being put to the general public?
So we have made the decision that we are going to a republic?
I thought we did.
And why nothing was done about it?
No, that's another question entirely. Perhaps that, too, is like the St. John Polyclinic that you raised. There were other priorities. There were other things pushed aside. I don't know. Don't forget, the D's didn't do the polyclinic right off the bat either because they didn't have the funds available. There are times that people have other priorities. They fix other things first and get around to what they want to get around to afterwards. I am sure there was a whole commission on republicanism in Barbados with town hall meetings and discussions and people presenting papers and all kinds of things. That's my recollection. I may be wrong. You know, there's a WhatsApp message that says here, Dennis Johnson, there you go again, rambling on and giving a lecture on government expenditure versus revenue, which everyone already knows about. Why didn't you mention that some governments in Barbados have mismanaged the taxpayers' money and also the corruption that has existed in some of our governments? That is the real reason why the hospital don't have all the critical equipment it needs to provide proper health care. And that is the real reason why so many of our roads are in a state of disrepair for so many years. Dear WhatsApper, that's your reading of the matter. I am personally affected by healthcare costs in Barbados, and I know that some of the things associated with healthcare costs in Barbados is greed. Mismanagement is another ramble for another time. And I could ramble about that too. But rambling about it will not fix the issue of greed. And if you have the same people who are providing private services at a public service institution where they can switch from one to the other and make money from it, that's not mismanaging taxpayers' money. You see, one of the challenges of sitting in this chair is that there are people who prefer to be anonymous who want me to do what they want me to do, but not what I want to do. So when I do what they want me to do, I'm a good boy. When I do what I want to do, you know, I'm the worst moderator there is. That's all right. Punch holes in the bottom of the boat until you need a lifeboat. And I hope somebody comes to help you. Brass Tacks, good morning. I like it. Hello. 434-1790. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. At this time of the season, a lot of West Indian cricket lovers are hooked on the IPL and what is happening because of the interest the IPL shows, and a lot of West Indian players are there as well. I know politics and cricket sort of sit in the same offices sometimes. And as an artist, I thought I'd just write a little short poem here on this cricket, T20 cricket. Not on a T20 wicket would you find any idiot playing cricket. It calls for special skill and ability to save a towering six right off the boundary. I would even say super agility. I've been watching IPL recently. You see the speed from a dropper archer that comes with a special character. And the consistency of a rabada, the speedster from South Africa. You see how De Kock and Hardik does beat ball, and how Cottrell salute when a wicket fall. Gill is no idiot. He's an IPL top batsman. Followed closely by Nicholas Puran, another West Indian. I see them every day on my TV. Their fellas make enough money. No idiot can't do them kind of things. That's my contribution.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Brass Tacks, good morning. Brass Tacks, good morning. 434-1790, hello.
Good morning, sir.
Hey.
Greetings, Mr. Johnson.
To you too, sir.
Greetings to all of our listeners. On Tuesday afternoon, I spoke to you on the topic of the last days. And this morning, I want to touch on another feature of the last days. I want to briefly explain something, because due to this forum, listeners are not really in a position to ask questions. So sometimes people ask me, what really is the last days? And I give them a simple illustration. Imagine you have 24 bottles of water. You consume 23. One is left back. And then eventually you use that one. Regardless if you give it away or throw it away. That's the last. The case done. That is the end. I also help them to understand that the last days are not a literal 24-hour day. It is actually a series of events and activities that identify a period of time that is characteristic to humanity. On Tuesday, I inadvertently omitted verse 4, which I want to highlight briefly this morning. Verse 4 says, along with lovers of themselves and lovers of money, he said that they will be lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Note there, the apostle did not say lovers of pleasure and lovers of God. He said they will be lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Actually saying they replace Almighty God, Jehovah, with pleasure. Now to my other feature and event of the last days. This one does not identify though antisocial behavior. This comes in the form of what we would call in Beijing, making marks for that. This one was written now by the Apostle Peter, and it's found at 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 3, which he says there. First of all, know this, same as the Apostle Paul, that in the last days, ridiculers will come with their ridicule, proceeding according to their own desires, and saying, where is this promised presence of his? Why, from there our forefathers fell asleep in death. All things are continuing exactly as they were from creation's beginning. When I was a little boy growing up in the city in the 70s, and I hear the church folks telling these guys, Christ coming, you know. They would say, man, be the hand that ever since, man. In 2020, the same attitudes persist. You will hear people say, my, the hand that Christ is coming, everything. So it is true. It is actually what it is saying. He also added, Mr. Johnson, and listeners, concerning the flood, people may export at the flood. A young man once asked me, you believe that Noah really care all the animals in the ark? I say, yes. He tell me, man, you foolish man. You believe that nonsense? But hear what the apostles say at verse 5. For they deliberately ignored this fact, that long ago there were heaven and an earth standing firmly out of water, and in the midst of water by the word of God, and that by those means the world of that time suffered destruction when it was flooded with water. Now, a person may not necessarily believe or don't have to believe a flood exists. But what they have to believe, that what the man says too, but the ridicule, it is with us. He goes on to say at verse 7, by the same word, the heavens and the earth that are now exist are reserved for fire and are being kept until the day of judgment and of destruction of the ungodly people. Some of the questions that people ask me concerning this verse, they would ask me, Richard, is this real fire or not? And I try to draw to their attention. Sometimes the word fire in the Bible can be seen literal or figurative. As in Revelation, it speaks about hell and death will be thrown into the lake of fire. You know we can't burn death. Neither can you burn hell, because these are conditions. But they can be done away with because fire literally destroys things. In that effect, the Satan asked me, what about people that who are elderly, mentally challenged, disabled, children, illiterate people? And it brought to their attention, if a person is 106 years old, and you understand, you hear this message, and you understand it. You don't sit back and say, man, I'm too old, no, it's longer to this, Lord. You pay attention to what is being said. I also want to draw to the listeners' attention about this scripture about ungodly people, to help them to understand that not only ungodly people will lose their life. Because Jesus said at Matthew 24:37, for just as the days of Noah were, so the presence or the coming of the Son of Man will be. For as they were in those days before the flood, eating and drinking, men marrying and women being given in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and they took no note until the flood came and swept them all away, so the presence of the Son of Man will be. This shows that not only ungodly people will lose, you know, sir. The system, the reason here is that people were not paying attention to what Noah was saying. And in these days, there is this series of things that can distract us, like ill health, the recent crime hit. You got a pandemic to deal with. You got a tanker that off because it's United Bay issues. You got a by-election, a general election, the government, etc. Then you got to deal with hurricanes, tornadoes, forest fires, and they can go on and on. These things can distract us. But I want to say to persons, pay attention to what the prophets are saying and the writers. Because even if you don't believe there was a flood or there was no, what the guy is saying about the ridicule is true. Because this is events that we see on a daily. Well, you normally won't say, Mr. Jones, because somebody, a person will normally ask you about this, because you were in broadcasting. There were more comments. Like, I would ask this teacher, what is the greatest commandment? Some people ask questions.
Sir, I want to tell you that one of the challenges of sitting here and engaging with callers and listening to them, bringing across their points of view, is that oftentimes we get asked questions, but the questions we get asked at a different level. We get asked our opinions on other things. And therefore, our focus sometimes will not be the same as your focus. You mentioned ship in the Gulf of Paria with oil that may spill. You had callers this morning who talked about problems that they have looking at people who are suffering. WhatsApp messages talking about people not social distancing while waiting for an appointment at the hospital. Those folks will see those issues with greater clarity and with greater urgency than the ones you talk about, and therefore would perhaps not be in the right frame of mind to listen to what you say to them. One of the important things, and you talk about being in the job that I am in, one of the things I learned from sitting here, sir, is that you have to know when people are ready to hear your message. And that's why people place their advertising in certain segments, because they think that people then will be listening. They don't play it when they think nobody's listening. So sometimes your message has to be timed to when people are ready to hear the message. Other than that, it would slide past them, sir, and you would have come back to them again with it, as you have from time to time. Thanks for your contribution, sir.